Now it's time for our trip to the barber shop. That's our weekly conversation where we talk about what's in the news and what's on our minds. Sitting in the chairs for a shape up this week, our tech writer and tech entrepreneur, Anil Dash. He's with us from the Radio Foundation studio in New York City. Hi, Anil.
Hello.
And here with us in our studios in Washington, D.C. are the Reverend Ken Blanchard. He's an ordained Baptist minister and a pro-gun activist, and he has a blog and a podcast called Black Man with a Gun. Welcome back. Thanks for joining us once again.
Thank you so much for the invitation.
Last but certainly not least, Gene Demby. He's the lead blogger for NPR's Code Switch team, which, as you know, focuses on race and ethnicity. Nice to have you back with us, too.
Thank you for having me.
So here's what the first thing we wanted to talk about is something that a lot of people have been paying attention to. Earlier this week, President Obama announced that he's going to pursue executive action on a number of gun safety measures. But that news was I don't know, almost overcome, I might say, by something else that happened in the press conference. And this was, you know, we're on the radio, so you can't see this, but there were some tears running down the president's cheek as he talked about meeting with the families of mass shooting victims, some of whom were there with him at the event. And this set off all the speculation about whether or not this was crocodile tears and so forth. So, Reverend Blanchard, I'm going to start with you because I know that you have a different opinion than the president does about gun safety measures, gun control measures. What did you think about that?
If I was in the president's shoes right now, the tears would be appropriate. I would cry, too, because people like my Aunt Bert, who actually love him to tears, will not listen to anything else that anybody else says because her president means this stuff. And he was crying and he's sincere. And it hit home with the people who love him.
But not you. I'm asking about you.
Because I'd do it if I was in his shoes. I think it was crocodile tears, actually.
You do?
Yeah.
You think it was fake?
Yeah.
Really? Why do you think that?
You're the leader of the free world. You are a manager, bar none. You are on the top of your game. That guy, that woman, that whoever's in that spot does not cry.
Does not cry. Okay. Anil, what do you think?
I watched a little bit of the conversation and the speech that he did. And I think right before that, he had referenced one of the dads who was there had been a father of one of the kids killed at Newtown. And I have a little boy who's he's going to be five in a few weeks, same age as those kids were. And I know that the president spent time with the parents at Newtown. And I mean, obviously, you know, Gabby Giffords is there. A lot of folks who'd been victims of gun violence were there. But, you know, he's there with one of these dads who lost a kid. And I think anybody who has a kid, if you can stand next to somebody who is telling the story of losing their child for any reason, let alone losing a child to violence, and not tear up, boy, I don't know what you're made out of. Because, I mean, and I think this is a conversation about, you know, guns in particular, but broaden it out to masculinity and what it is to be a man in the public sphere and what tears mean. Mm-hmm. Boy, I think we could do with a lot more leaders in on a big stage who are not afraid to cry when talking about something like children dying, like talk about things that actually impact people's lives. I think... I never questioned it. You know, I'm of course a big city liberal and all those other things, but every time I saw, you know, John Boehner cry, I think it's sincere. I think it's actually, for as much as I disagree with his policies or whatever that else he'd brought up, I never questioned that was not only real, but I think probably the best thing about him. And it's very human and thoughtful.
But what about that? Gene, you want a piece of this?
Sure. It seems like, you know, how much you respond to this as crocodile tears depends on sort of your partisan affiliation. But it seems like some of this is about Obama himself, right? He's a self-described.
I was going to say, why? Like, I don't remember people saying that John Boehner was crying crocodile tears. He used to cry all the time. In fact, let me just play a short clip of this. This is one of his more famous moments. He was doing an interview on 60 Minutes. Mm-hmm. Liz, can we play that?
Making sure that these kids have a shot at the American dream. Like I did. It's important.
Did you think that John Boehner was faking?
That didn't even feel right. I mean, if I as a Marine, if my commander starts to weep, I'm looking at him like, what's wrong? I am a dad. I understand the love of loss and grief like anybody. I weep in the pulpit. But there's a time and a place for everything.
So,
Gene, what do you think?
How is that different from being in the pulpit, though? If you're weeping in the pulpit, that's both sincere, but it's also rhetorical, right? I mean, you're trying to get across that you're trying to get across how sincerely you feel this thing you're saying. So, is that artificial, or is that just sort of a magnification of the way you feel as a way to broadcast?
On that one, I agree with you.
Okay, so is that different then? If Obama's doing it, if the president's doing it in this press conference, is that sort of different from what you're doing in the pulpit?
Yeah, only because if you're set up for press, you know why you're there. It's not. With Mr. Boehner, I might have to disagree now that I say that. But it's press releases, you know you're going to be in the media. Mm-hmm. You know folks are going to take your stuff left and right of the circle. You're not on that same magnifying glass.
So are you saying, wait a minute, are you saying that you think it was fake because you assume that if you're in the media, you've got yourself under control? Or is it that...
No, you know because, where you're at.
Yeah. So
you know all your stuff's going to be out there. So everything you do has to be planned. You probably got five
people. So you think John Boehner was fake too?
Yeah,
now that you think about it, you do too. And you think, actually, what I was wondering is, does this offend your idea of what it means to be a leader? Is that really what the issue is for you?
No.
Okay.
I mean, Obama is, his whole demeanor is that he's stoic. And so I wonder how much of this is about sort of just him. This is not emotion. I think the only other time I remember him crying was, I think, when his grandmother died.
With Sandy Hook. I mean, it was before he was elected, but during Sandy Hook, it's the same sort of issue. That's what I find so fascinating. People criticize him for being too cool, and then, when he's upset about something, but I don't know.
I think the only gun stuff thing is an interesting comment because I think we all have things that move us and that are powerful and that might not fit into a logical framework. Mm-hmm. Right. And I mean, I think of like the months after my son was born, like I was on a plane watching some bad movie and I just started getting choked up, you know, and it was like, it wasn't like, oh, this movie is so touching that they have, you know, emotionally hurt me. And it's like, oh, now it's going to be kid stuff. Anything with fathers and sons is going to touch me in a different way. And I think there are things that people respond to. And this is what I say more broadly, separate from any of these political leaders and what we think about them. I think there is no man in the public sphere that doesn't understand how some people think a man crying in public is bad, period. Doesn't matter if you're a leader, an artist, whatever you do, an activist, anything.
Well, some people think women crying in public, too, if they're leaders is bad, too. I mean, people have not been pleased to see that either.
Sure.
So anyway, look, you know what? I cry at Sprint commercials, so I have nothing to say about this. So I guess it's a good thing I'm not president for Ken anyway. So let me move on to something else that the White House had to weigh in on this weekend. That's that Netflix series, Making a Murderer.
Oh,
it's this latest criminal justice docudrama. It picks apart the case of Stephen Avery, a Wisconsin man who was in prison for 18 years, then they let him out, and then he's put back in prison for a murder, which they think he might have been framed for because he was about to get some big settlement. So, you know, Gene, you've been watching this. I just wondered if you have some thoughts about this. This, along with, you know, Serial, which was a very popular podcast, The Jinx on HBO. Mm-hmm. But, you know, some people are starting to kind of feel a little icky about this, like this is entertainment. So how is it entertainment when this is somebody's lives? What do you think about
this?
These
are real people's lives, and they're being sort of crushed by the criminal justice system. You know, it's weird. It seems like there's a pendulum swing. So much of our popular culture, when we see the criminal justice system, has been really pro-prosecution for like a long time, right? You got Law and Order. The cops are always right. The judges are always right. Everyone's the bad guys get convicted. And I think maybe it's because there are different voices in the media conversation now where people have more skepticism towards the way that process works. But it seems like we're having Serial is sort of about, you know, the integrity of this case. Like, did this cat really do this, right? And this is, in this case and Making a Murder is even more extreme because it seemed like he was framed. But as Ken and I were talking before, just before we came in here, you know, there's so many ways that people get railroaded by the criminal justice system that don't even be this egregious, right? I mean, if you get hit with 6 charges, right? I think somebody says that in Making a Murder, one of the defense attorneys says, you know, you have to run the table if you go to court, right? Because if you get convicted on one of those charges, you're going to jail. So you have to decide whether you want to go to court and fight these charges or you want to take a plea deal and go to jail anyway.
So you think it's a good thing that there are all these vehicles right now to talk about this?
I think we should be talking about our criminal justice system. It has such consequences for so many Americans, right? And we tend to look at it. It tends to be treated with
kid gloves
and like and look at with the rose-colored glasses and justice and all that stuff like that. And I think over the last year, especially when we talk about Black Lives Matter and all this other stuff, we've seen how much the country is divided on these issues.
What do you think about Ken?
I've realized recently that justice is expensive. If you really want to have the justice system work for you, you can't be poor. Mm. You'll get railroaded really, really fast. Mm. You won't have the education. You won't know all the rights. Nobody will have the time to talk to you. And
so what do you think about this as entertainment vehicles? Well,
I think it's always been there. I remember they were like, it was paperback before, the crime novels, the true detectives, And it was kind of almost pornography at one time, but it's kind of pornography now. It's so graphic, you can kind of put it there.
Do you watch it?
No.
You don't watch it?
I had to do a crash course before I came here today.
Okay.
Because I wanted to, like, see what y'all talking about. I was like, oh, no, this is another one of those situations where the world is just starting to catch up to how our system is.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And Neil, what do you think?
Yeah, you know, I think the justice system broadly has always been entertainment. I mean, everybody who's ever said, oh, I love The Wire, I mean, a lot of what you're talking about there is the justice system and how it works and how it doesn't work. But the damning thing is that usually we're watching a fictitious version. You know, when Law and Order says ripped from the headlines, what they mean is we're doing everything we can to not tell a real story. We're going to evoke all the emotion of a real story and not give you the real story.
Okay.
For me, I think it's huge progress if what is actually engaging people is true stories of people that were actually negatively impacted by this. Like, I actually can't think of anything better for, especially, you know, those of us that are very fortunate in our lives, to choose to, even if it's in the framework of entertainment, to choose to listen to somebody's story that's on the margins.
I got to leave it there for now. Gene, I have to ask you, though. You know Powerball's tonight, right? I know you have a ticket. Yeah. What are you going to do if you win?
I got to say the rap thing. I got to buy my mom a house, right? That's the first thing. And then I would give money to my local NPR member station, right? No. And then I would probably just turn up and act stupid. That would definitely happen.
Well, I'll call you from my private island next week because I'm going to win. That's Clint Blanchard, Reverend Ken Blanchard, Gene Denby, and Anil Dash. Thank you all so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.